Welcome to Since You Asked with Jim Barrier on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Send Jim your questions about the Bible and Christianity to jim@cgmradio.com. Subscribe to Since You Asked by visiting us online at cgmradio.com/ask. And now, here's your host, Jim Barrier.
Last week, I began in Ephesians 5, where it says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands." And I pointed out that this passage nowhere implies that all women must submit to all men. One time I invited a friend of mine to church. Now, he was not exactly humble. In fact, he was kind of a Pharisee. And we attended a class being taught by a woman who was a friend of mine, a gifted teacher. When she began her Bible study, my friend stood up and read from 1 Timothy chapter 2, "I do not allow a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. For it was Adam who was first created, then Eve. And it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman who was deceived and became a wrongdoer. But women will be preserved through childbirth if they continue in faith, love, and sanctity." I was mortified. My friend made the mistake that many have made, understanding Paul's instruction to Timothy. In order to clearly understand, we must know the background. Now, Timothy was the pastor in Ephesus. Ephesus was the location of the Temple of Artemis, who was also known as Diana. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And Paul caused no small stir in Ephesus in Acts 19 because people who were being converted to Christianity were forsaking idols that were made to honor Artemis. This would upset the local economy. The crowd got so riled up that for 2 hours they chanted, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." The worship of Artemis dominated Ephesian culture. It was believed that Artemis was the preeminent firstborn. Apollo, her twin, was subsequent. This birth order gave Artemis dominance over her male twin. The result was women being elevated in Ephesian culture. This explains Paul's reference to Adam being created first. Artemis was a deity emphasizing fertility, virginity, and the protection of childbearing, the sovereign ruler who was in control of who lived or died. Paul was setting the record straight by saying, "Women will be protected by the Lord while childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and sanctity. Jesus is the Lord of life, not this false goddess." All of the companions of Artemis were virgins. They took a vow saying they would remain virgins and dedicate themselves to Artemis. In chapter 4, Paul calls those who forbid marriage liars. So what we find is a culture that put women on a pedestal, perverting the role of women and the institution of marriage. The gospel of Jesus Christ does not elevate women over men, or forbid marriage, or allow the worship of idols. In 1 Corinthians 14, Paul says, "Women are to be kept silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak. If they desire to learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. For it is improper for a woman to speak in church." Yet, 3 chapters earlier, he says, "Women should have their heads covered while praying or prophesying." How can a woman pray or prophesy without speaking? What are we missing here? Even in modern Jewish synagogues, women are separated from men. When women were asking questions amongst themselves, they would disrupt the service. That is the talking he was addressing. But clearly they could pray out loud and prophesy. When Joseph and Mary brought the baby Jesus to be circumcised, they met a prophetess named Anna. She did not leave the temple serving night and day with fasting and prayer, and she came up giving thanks to God and continually spoke about him to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Israel. This was in the temple, a woman constantly speaking. Acts 21 mentions Philip, the evangelist, who had four daughters who were prophetesses. Obviously, women are allowed to prophesy. Paul wraps up this segment in 1 Corinthians 14 with, "Earnestly desire to prophesy, and do not forbid to speak in tongues, but all things must be done properly and in an orderly way. That is the issue." Last week, I read from 1 Corinthians 7 about husbands and wives. I'll pick up where we left off. "I wish that all men were even as myself. However, each has his own gift from God, one in this way and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I," he means single. "But if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion." Paul is not forbidding marriage or celibacy. He's saying, to each his own. "But to the married I give instructions, not I but the Lord, that the wife is not to leave her husband. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And that the husband is not to divorce his wife. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has an unbelieving wife, and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And if any woman has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, she must not divorce her husband. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet if an unbeliever is leaving, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace. For how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife?" To understand this fully, we need a little background check. Now, Paul had been a Pharisee, part of the Sanhedrin, and a rabbi. He was most likely, therefore, married before his encounter on the Damascus Road. But by the time he wrote these letters, he was no longer married. When Saul of Tarsus was converted and became Paul the Apostle, his own people rejected him. This likely included his wife. Paul was speaking from experience. His wife was unwilling to remain with him. He was no longer bound to that marriage. Later in chapter 9, he asks, "Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, even as the rest of the apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Peter?" He was stating his case that he could marry if he wanted to. By the way, Peter was married. Now concerning virgins, "I have no command of the Lord, but I am offering direction as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I think then that this is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is." The distress was persecution. "Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. For the present form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be both holy in body and spirit. But the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world and how she may please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to put a restraint on you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God. Now this stirs up a real issue. Can a person who is divorced get remarried? The widow is not bound, and she may get married again. And he said earlier, if a believer has an unbelieving spouse who leaves, they are not in bondage. In other words, they are not bound. I can hear you screaming, "Wait a minute, Jim. Are you saying that there is more than one reason a person can be divorced? And are you saying that a divorced person can remarry?" Yes. And I think that I, too, have the Spirit of God. Let's go back to the words of Jesus when the legalistic folks of his day took him to task. "Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it has not been that way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery." Remember, adultery is defined as a double bond. If a divorced person is still in love with a previous spouse, that is clearly a double bond. This also applies to one who is widowed. If you were once married, and that marriage ended due to divorce, death, or abandonment, you'd better make sure that you have died to that marriage, or you leave the door open for double bonding. Then the disciples said to Jesus, "If the relationship of the man with his wife is like this, it is better not to marry." But he said to them, "Not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by people, and there are also eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who is able to accept this, let him accept it." Jesus is saying the same thing Paul said. If you can live a celibate life without sinning, then so be it. But if you don't have the gift of celibacy, ask God to lead you to the person of his choice for you to marry. Paul also taught these principles. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind, and whatever is not from faith is sin. And whatever you do, do all things for the glory of God. The real issue is always the heart. Jesus constantly affirmed that the heart is what is important. Pharisees are always more concerned with the letter of the law than the spirit. I view divorce the same way I view abortion. It is tragic. It is the result of selfishness and sin. But where sin abounds, grace much more abounds. I am more interested in promoting healing than punishment. Some people are divorced even after doing all they could to save the marriage. Others became Christians after they failed in marriage. Remember the woman at the well? She had been married 5 times and was shacking up with a guy when she met Jesus, but her life changed. If someone does not have the gift of celibacy, what are they to do? Do they not have the right to take along a believing spouse? Jesus is all about redemption. He wants to redeem your life. He wants to redeem your marriage. He wants to redeem the institution of marriage. So let me recap these 2 weeks of podcast. We must all live in humility and submission. Marriage must reflect Christ and His church. We must reject the permissive values and sensuality of our culture. We must walk in our own calling whether that is to be married or single, and we must walk in grace. We must do all things for the glory of God. This has been Jim Barrier on Since You Asked.
Since You Asked is a production of Jim Barrier and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/ask.